Hello, I'm Joseph Kassa, and welcome to this podcast where the AI team does a deep dive into some application of systems thinking.
Welcome to our deep dive, everybody. This time we're taking a look back at 50 years of amateur radio software. And to help us do that, we've got some great material from Dr. Joseph Kassa.
Really fascinating stuff.
It is, yeah. We talk a lot about, you know, the history of amateur radio, and a lot of times it's focused on the hardware, right? But Dr. Kassa really kind of opens our eyes to how important software has been all along.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's so interesting is how much of it predates, you know, what we think of as the modern internet and personal computers and all that.
I mean, think about it. He was doing this stuff back when amateur radio was really all about DIY.
Oh, yeah, totally. You couldn't just go buy parts off the shelf. If you wanted to build a radio, you had to build everything yourself from scratch.
Talk about a challenge.
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, that's what fueled so much of the innovation. Amateurs were constantly pushing the boundaries, coming up with new applications, even starting businesses.
Yeah, that's a good point. It wasn't just a hobby. It was like a breeding ground for new ideas.
Exactly. They were the original hackers, in a way, driven by passion, just wanting to see what they could do with radio waves.
And a lot of them, you know, ended up going pro.
Right.
Taking their knowledge and skills into the commercial world.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And their discoveries, you know, they laid the foundation for a lot of the products and technologies we use every day without even realizing it.
It's amazing to think about the impact they had. But, you know, things started changing pretty rapidly in the 1970s with the emergence of digital communication and the early internet.
Yeah, that's when things really took off. Suddenly, there were all these new technologies to explore. Packet radio, satellites, even efforts to speed up communication using radio teletype or RTTY.
Wow, it must have been like a whole new world opening up. I bet it was a little overwhelming, too, trying to keep up with all the new gadgets and advancements.
It was. It was an exciting time, though. A lot of experimentation. Of course, not every innovation was successful. Some ideas, while groundbreaking, had their limitations.
Yeah, that makes sense. Not everything takes off.
Like early packet radio systems, they had issues with reliability. And efforts to speed up RTTY communication, they faced technical hurdles. Even satellites, which held so much promise for global communication, presented unique challenges.
So where does Dr. Kassa fit into all of this?
Well, Dr. Kassa, he was one of those early pioneers, and he started experimenting with an 8080 microcomputer back in the 1970s. Now, remember, this was cutting edge for its time.
Oh, yeah. We're talking, what, teletype input, paper tape storage?
Exactly. Not exactly user-friendly. Can you imagine trying to code on that thing?
I can't even imagine. It must have taken serious dedication.
It did. And it's with this 8080 that he came up with a really ambitious idea back in 1970. He wanted to automate contest operation using digital logic circuits. Basically, he was trying to create a self-operating radio teletypewriter.
Whoa, a self-operating radio teletypewriter. Now, that sounds like something out of science fiction.
It was a radical idea at the time. And get this. The ARRL, the National Association for Amateur Radio, they actually rejected his proposal, deemed it, quote unquote, too imaginative.
You've got to be kidding. Too imaginative. The organization that thrives on innovation.
It's pretty ironic, right? But it just goes to show how ahead of his time he was. And if you look at the logic flow he designed, it's clear he was onto something.
So he wasn't deterred by their rejection.
Not at all. In fact, he continued to refine his ideas, and one of his biggest passions was the ARR sweepstakes contest. This is a contest that challenges participants to contact stations in all 75 ARR sections across the United States and Canada.
Wow, all 75. That's a lot.
Yeah, the goal is to achieve what they call a clean sweep. And to understand the factors that influence success in this contest, Dr. Kassa actually created a simulation of the contest.
Hold on. He created a whole simulation. What did that even look like?
It was incredibly detailed. He took into account the number of amateurs in a given location, the probability of interference, even things like the likelihood of having reliable power at each station. He even created a visual map of all the sections, turning the contest into a strategic puzzle.
That's incredible. So did his simulation help him win the contest?
Well, the simulation wasn't quite ready in time for the 1977 contest, but the knowledge he gained from it helped him achieve an amazing feat in the 1979 contest. He managed to contact 74 out of the 75 sections.
74 out of 75. That's impressive. Talk about dedication. What do you do next?
He kept pushing forward. He continued to work on his contest software, moving from those, you know, clunky text-based interfaces to more colorful, user-friendly versions. But along the way, he noticed something interesting.
Oh, what was that?
He realized that even with the visual improvements, something was missing. That real-time interaction and sound that we take for granted in software today.
That's a great point. Makes you think about how much of our software experience relies on those elements. What do you think, listener? How important are real-time interaction and sound to your experience with software?
That's a good question. But what Dr. Kasser did next really pushed the boundaries of what amateur radio software could do. We're talking about automating conversations, QSOs, as they're called in the amateur radio world.
Okay, now this is where things get really interesting. Software that can hold conversations on its own. Get ready for some serious aha moments, folks, because what Dr. Kasser achieved is nothing short of remarkable. Software that can actually hold conversations over the radio. How did he even begin to approach that?
It was groundbreaking stuff. Back in 1981, he developed this program called PK23Com, which later became LANLINK. And during a contest using this software, his computer was able to contact stations in countries he hadn't even heard of.
No way, that's wild. So how did it actually, you know, carry on these conversations? It couldn't have just been sending pre-programmed messages, right?
Right, it was way more sophisticated than that. He developed a system based on what he called state tables and word paths. So imagine like a flowchart where each word the software receives leads to a different response.
Okay, I'm starting to see it.
Yeah, so it could follow these paths, sending pre-programmed responses, asking questions, even branching off into different conversational threads based on what the other station sent back.
It's like a choose-your-own-adventure book, but for radio communication.
Exactly. And when you look at the visuals from his presentation, you can see the level of detail, the planning that went into the system.
Sounds complex.
It was, but it worked. And he didn't stop there. He went on to develop software for all sorts of applications, award record keeping, digital SSTV, which is a way to send and receive images over radio, even satellite tracking and decoding telemetry from space.
Whoa, hold on. Satellite data, that must have been a whole other level of complexity.
It was. Each satellite transmits telemetry in a unique digital format, so you need custom software to decode and display the information. Now, he could have created separate programs for each satellite.
Yeah, but that would have been a lot of work, right?
A ton of work. So he came up with a much more elegant solution, what he called parameter-driven software. So basically, he created software that could adapt to different formats based on a table of settings for each satellite.
So it's like a universal translator for satellite data.
Exactly. Just change the parameters in a table, and the same software could decode and display information from all these different satellites. And he actually provides example tables in his presentation, really shows the level of detail involved.
Sounds like you really had a talent for, you know, finding efficient solutions.
Absolutely. And it kind of brings us to another important aspect of his work, the importance of standards. Just like he created parameter-driven software for satellite data, he advocated for interface standards to streamline development and collaboration in the world of amateur radio software.
That makes sense. I mean, think about how frustrating it is when different apps on our phones can't talk to each other.
Right. Standardized interfaces would let developers build on each other's work, create a more integrated experience for everyone.
So how does this idea of standards play out in, you know, the modern era of amateur radio software?
Well, today we've got these open source projects like JT65 and FT8, really powerful tools for decoding weak signals. But even brilliant open source code can sometimes have clunky interfaces.
So we're back to the issue of standards again.
Exactly. Sometimes the technology advances faster than the usability.
So what's the solution?
He envisions a future where amateur radio software is not only powerful, but also easy to use, readily adaptable, and encourages collaboration.
A vision that resonates with the open source philosophy. Hmm. But beyond the technical achievements, what were some of the key takeaways from Dr. Kasser's, you know, incredible journey?
He really emphasized the importance of careful planning, logical flow, rigorous testing, constant refinement, believed those principles were essential for creating reliable and effective software.
And that's something that anyone involved in software development can take to heart, right?
Absolutely. But there's something else about his work that I find really inspiring, and that's his passion for what he calls homebrewing software.
It's more than just coding, isn't it?
It's about the joy of creation, the satisfaction of building something from scratch, and the endless possibilities that software development offers.
And you, as an amateur radio enthusiast, you can probably relate to that, right? That feeling of building something with your own hands.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And he believes that homebrewing software is accessible to anyone with a computer and a spark of curiosity. It's a way to explore your interests, solve problems, create tools that can benefit the entire community.
It's empowering to think that anyone can get involved and make a real contribution. So as we wrap up this deep dive into 50 years of amateur radio software, what stands out to you, dear listener? What surprised you most about this world where bits meet radio waves? For me, it's how these early pioneers, like Dr. Kasser, they weren't afraid to, you know, push the boundaries, even when people were skeptical.
That's what's so great about amateur radio. It's all about exploration and innovation. And his story really shows how that can lead to, well, amazing things, things that have a real impact.
And it's inspiring to see that same spirit today. Even with all the, you know, fancy technology and commercial software we have, there's still room for individuals to make a difference.
Oh, absolutely. The tools have changed a lot in the past 50 years, but the heart of amateur radio, it's still the same. That thirst for knowledge, the willingness to experiment, the desire to connect with others who get it.
And Dr. Kasser, he really emphasized that homebrewing software doesn't have to be this complicated thing, you know. You don't need expensive equipment or anything.
It's really just about having a computer and some curiosity.
Exactly. Anyone can get involved, contribute to the community. So as we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave you with a question to think about. What will you create with the power of software?
What problems will you solve? What connections will you make? It really is up to you.
Who knows? Maybe your too imaginative idea will be the next big thing.
The future of amateur radio is bright, and with the power of software, there's never been a better time to get involved.
So go out there and create something amazing. We can't wait to see what you come up with.
I hope you enjoyed today's deep dive. If you'd like to discuss any of the questions or anything that you heard in the podcast, or would like the team to do a deep dive into a different topic, please join the LinkedIn group and let me know. I look forward to providing you with many more deep dives into the applications of systems thinking. Take care.